behind the screen. There's a world of pure imagination behind the screen.
Gloria Gaynor.
I don't know. Why would she bring up Gloria Gaynor?
Wasn't she on Survivor?
No.
No, Gloria Gaynor sang a song.
Yeah, she said she'd survive.
She'd survive.
Yeah.
But she wasn't on Survivor?
No, you're thinking of Beyonce and Destiny's Child.
Well, they should get them and Gloria Gaynor on Survivor Island.
Like a celebrity Survivor?
Yeah, but only people who've sung songs that sort of sound like they...
What about...
And then they can cover Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah, what about Survivor?
Yeah, you get Survivor on the island. Great.
Hey, everybody, I'm Paul Goebel. Welcome to the Paul Goebel Show. You're joining us on a beautiful day here in Southern California. Joining me, as always, is my best friend and co-host, Jim Bruce.
Hey, everybody, it's Raining Man.
And his best friend and co-host, Tom Griffin, is also here.
Hello.
And our guest today is somebody we met long ago when she did my show at the UCB Theater. You might remember her from Survivor or Survivor All-Stars or Survivor Heroes and Villains or Survivor Fans versus Favorites or other things she's done. Jerry Manby is our guest today. Welcome to the show, Jerry.
Hi, thanks for having me. You know what, just for the record, I was not on Fans versus Favorites. That might make someone upset if I don't
know
that.
I thought you did four versions.
Nope, but Rob Mariano is the only one that's ever done four
this
seasons.
This is his fourth, that's right.
Yeah.
You did three. You and a few other people did three.
Exactly, yeah.
But you were like in the top five of people who have been on it the longest, right?
I think there's a handful.
That's pretty great. That's, I mean, say what you want. That's something to be envied. I certainly couldn't do that. I remember long ago, I thought, I think I might want to be on Survivor. And I was looking at the application, and, like, the first thing it says is, you must be in top physical and mental health. And I stopped reading right there.
Was it the physical or mental part that got
you? Yeah, a little of both. A little from column A, a little from column B.
Yeah, Paul is in the top physical condition that he's ever been in.
But, or ever will be.
But that just means he's not going to die today.
So, yeah, I mean, anyone who can put up with all that nonsense out there, especially as long as you did, has my respect. But let's talk about you on Survivor. Now, that last one with villains and heroes, I thought that was an awesome season because it was a great idea, and it was good seeing all the, you know, your favorites again back, but it was nice the way they split it up and made it clear who you wanted to root for. And once again, Russell made it into it. And now tell me how you felt about this. Everybody on the show knew each other except for Russell. Am I right about that?
Yes, you are correct. And I personally don't really think that was fair.
Because everybody knew each other's game except for him.
Yeah. But I mean, I've been saying since Australia that there's nothing about the game of Survivor that is based on fairness anyway.
Well, I remember you said that when you were in Australia, when you wanted to choose Colby as your partner and everyone said, hey, that's not fair. And
exactly.
There's nothing fair about this game.
Wow, you have a great memory, Paul.
That's what I do. That's what I do. But yeah, I always thought that was horseshit. And when he made it to the final two, I thought there's no way he would have made it to the final two if people had known he was such a liar.
No. I mean, the second I started watching his season after we got back, and I saw him burn people's socks and empty out their water, I mean, I was completely appalled. Honestly, I think he should have been kicked out of the game for that because it's literally infringing on other people's survival.
Right. I mean, what do you have to burn before they go, okay, enough?
Like, I know. I'm sure if it was someone's underwear, it might not have gone down so easily.
Right, or the tent. You wait till everybody's off looking for food and burn down the tent. Oh, no, look what happened, everybody.
Wait till they're inside it.
Yeah, hey, wake up, the tent's on fire. I mean, how far do you go? And now I think proof of his, you know, his shenanigans not paying off was, you know, this most recent version of Survivor when everybody knew his horseshit and his, unlike Rob, you know, his tribe said, no, I don't think we're going to play your game. And they fucking 86'd him. And then, and he got voted off. What did you think of that?
Oh, well, I'm not going to lie. I was jumping up and down all excited, throwing a big party when Russell finally got voted off. And
I thought it was hilarious. And I told my kids, you got to watch next week because Russell's, you know, he's over on the Redemption Island. And then, And then when he loses on the Redemption Island and then starts to cry, that had to be one of the best Survivor moments in Survivor history.
Uh-huh. Well, you know what? I love the fact that he cried, honestly, but I think it's just because it made him appear a little bit more human. And if he had just exited in a very humble, quiet way, you're like, oh, you know, but no, he had to like go off on some tirade and like out everybody and then throw in once again, like he always does, about how he's the best player of all time. He's the king of Survivor. He's playing with a bunch of idiots. You know, I'm like, dude, you got voted off.
He could have just cried and said, boy, you know, this is a really humbling experience and it sucks. But instead he had to go, oh, I'm crying because my team is a bunch of dummies.
Yeah.
And they're all dumb and I'm going to try to get in my last jabs. It was really sad.
It was. And, you know, and that's the thing about Russell that, you know, sets me over the edge. As much as I want to really enjoy the fact that he's good TV, all he does is say the same things over and over again, saying everybody else is stupid. I mean,
yeah, it gets a little old.
Yeah, at this point,
change the record.
Yeah, at this point, it's very old because it's three times in a row. You know what I'm saying? So,
and he's probably done though, right? Like, what would you bring him back for?
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, if he had done well this show, sure, bring him back for another one. But I mean, he was like the first guy gone from that tribe. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know if you guys follow all the gossip and the behind-the-scenes stuff, but if there is any validity to the whole controversy that he's the one who leaked all the information, the boot lists and all that kind of stuff, and then there is, in fact, a hard drive somewhere that's got this proof on it, that's what we've all heard.
Oh, yeah, if that's the case, he'll never be back ever again.
Yeah, that's why when
he's violating contract, right?
Oh, my gosh, yeah, it says in the contract, if you leak anything, you can get sued for $5 million. And that's why when he stood there crying and he said, I have so much respect for this game, Jeff, you know, I just about wanted to throw up. Because anyone who respects the game doesn't leak all kinds of crazy information.
That's true. At least Stacey Stillman didn't expect to be invited back on the show after she, filed her lawsuits.
Yeah, but she also won the lawsuit, got millions of dollars, and walked away not really caring about Survivor anymore.
That's pretty great. Maybe I'll do that. I should sue Survivor.
Yeah.
For what?
You know.
No, you know what? You sue Gloria Gaynor.
Why do I sue Gloria Gaynor?
Because you won't survive.
And that song gave me false hopes about surviving.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, that's right. And I'm going to sue Beyonce and Destiny's Child for being a shitty band.
Because you can't even walk out the door.
Now, I think we talked about this when you were on my show at the UCB. My favorite moment of yours was on Survivor All-Stars when you were in that tribe with Russell, with Rupert. And he digs that big trench at the bottom of your tent, and you guys are all sitting there knee-deep in cold, freezing cold water, and you said, I want to go home.
Oh, I said, it's just not worth it.
That was so great. But you went back a sec. I mean, obviously you toughed it out like you should do, and then you went back a third time. And, I mean, obviously at the time, when you're there, there's times when you're like, ah, this really sucks. But I can only imagine that, especially a person like you, once it's all said and done and you get a good night's rest and you took a shower, you look back on it and say, that was fucking awesome.
No, I never said that.
Never, really? Not in any of the three times. I mean, even going to Australia and seeing all the great things there are to see there?
No. Australia was amazing. That was an absolute amazing experience. Panama was the worst thing I've ever done in my whole life.
Oh.
I still tell people that if some point in your life someone says to you, you now have the option to either go to hell or go to Panama, I'm telling you, choose hell. Don't even think about it.
Good
Just
to
go
know.
Straight to hell.
I've always wanted to see the Hell Canal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love how you call it a tent. It's like a bunch of sticks, dude. There's no tent.
And you guys are all huddling around trying to stay warm. That was a great night. But unlike other people, you're still a fan of the show and you still watch it.
Not so much. I mean, this time around, I'm definitely watching it.
Yeah.
More so because I do a weekly video podcast with a bunch of other former Survivor members, which is basically like a big party on my computer screen every week where we just kind of like hash everything out and praise people who need to be praised and call people out on their crap. You know, it's a lot of fun. It's actually, you can see it on rtvzone.com. It's a very cool video podcast that we do. And that's really the only reason I'm watching, honestly.
What's the name? Does the show itself have a name?
Just the Survivor Recap. Okay. But the interesting thing about it is that there's usually 6 to 8 of us former survivors all in little squares on your screen. And, you know, we're all, like, drinking cocktails and just talking a bunch of smack. It's a lot of fun.
And it's rtvzone.com.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. All right, yeah, people go check that out. That sounds like fun. I meant to ask you this before we started, and we don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, but I read that note, I guess you made it public on your Facebook page, when you had some trouble on an airline.
Oh, yeah.
Did you want to tell that story? Because I found it fascinating, quite frankly, because I hate to fly, especially now. I mean, I don't know who likes to fly, but there's so many a-holes. Birds?
Yeah.
Okay. There's so many a-holes on planes now, and I always think, well, at least the flight attendants are nice, or at least the crew here is nice, and they know what they're doing. But when I read this story of what happened to you, I thought, holy fuck, you're not even safe from people on the plane now. The people who work there are going to be a-holes. Do you want to share with everybody what happened?
Yeah, it was absolute insanity. Like, I don't know if this flight attendant recognized me from TV and hated me, or if she was just singling me out for whatever reason. I really never did find that part out. But yeah, she for some reason thought that my carry-on was too big. And it is, you know, so small. There's pictures of it on the internet. You can go to my Facebook page and read the entire story. Like, I wrote that story the night it happened. So I wrote it exactly word for word the way it happened. You know, I ended up getting kicked off the plane because in the end, the thing that I guess got the woman was that I said the name Jesus in vain.
That's the funniest part. At one point you were so fed up, you went, Jesus. And that was the last straw for her.
Yep. She said, you better hold on to your coat. You're going to need it when you get evicted off this plane for taking the Lord's name in vain.
Wow. You were flying Jesus Airlines, right?
You know, apparently I didn't get the memo or didn't read the fine print on my ticket. Yeah, U.S. Airways and Jesus apparently are, you know, hand in hand.
That's hilarious.
She's being short-sighted, too, because you need heretics on the plane just in case Jesus takes the pilot or something.
Yeah, it's true.
You got to have heretics to safely land the plane.
If the rapture happens.
Yeah, if the rapture happens while you're in flight, yeah, you need someone to stick around.
You've got a plan for that.
You know, the only thing that would have been worse is if you took Sully Sullenberg's name in vain. I think that would have got you kicked off and banned for life, probably.
Whose name?
Sully Sullenberg, you know, the dude who landed the plane on the Hudson River.
Oh, wow.
If you go, Sully Sullenberg, in the middle of it, they all fucking freak out.
Oh, people need to start doing that.
Take your peanuts and they go crazy.
Yeah, I've had to fly U.S. Airways once, but it was because someone else bought the ticket. It was for a charity event, so that's the only other time I've flown it, but I will never, ever buy a ticket on U.S. Airways again. I just won't.
It's fucking crazy, and it's funny, because I hear stories about, you know, it's like every other day somebody has a story about some airline who did them in, you know, Kevin Smith and his hassles, and it just seems so arbitrary sometimes.
Well, it seems to me that the more stories you hear, the more I think, wow, now that they're running on such a tight budget and they're a tight profit margin that their standards have just gone down. Like, just flying is not as pleasant as it used to be.
See, that's why I like to take the bus.
It seems like a lot of the international companies, I still always hear really, I don't fly international, but right. I know people who do, and I always hear that a lot of the international airlines
aren't they more profitable too? Yeah. Like, well, those are more solid companies in general, right?
Brooke always flies Air Canada because she goes to Canada a lot, and when we went to Toronto on Air Canada, it was really nice. Yeah. But maybe just because they're Canadian.
Yeah,
Canadians are always nice.
If you say Anne Murray, you're off.
But like, I've got friends in Japan, and from what I hear, some of the Southeast Asian airlines are great. So
right.
That's why I like to take the bus, because you can do whatever you want there. They don't give a shit.
Yeah. I think you can take the bus to Japan.
Well, I mean, you can take it part way.
You got to get a transfer to get there.
Yeah, you do have to get a transfer. You can't. It's not a straight shot. Absolutely not.
So like an extra quarter, right?
All right. Well, let's
got to switch lines at midnight.
So if people want to read that whole story, it's a note on your Facebook page, correct, Jerry?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely worth a read.
It's a fascinating read. Yeah.
It's ridiculous what happened, and. You know, I mean, I literally went out of my way to find out the woman's name, get her badge number, and all this kind of stuff, because people on the plane, on my way, getting escorted off of it, were literally stopping the security people saying, I don't understand what's happening. She didn't do anything to deserve this.
Like, so they were standing up for you.
Yeah, and they gave me their name, their numbers. I have, like, all this information just from people on the plane who were ready to stand up for me. Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
That's hilarious. And now that, I assume it probably doesn't happen so much anymore, but after Survivor Australia, you know, you were edited, they edit around you to be the bitch of the show and all that. And you know, obviously, I got to know you, and you're a very nice person, like most people are, but I'm sure that happened a lot when, especially when the show was on, people would see you and say, that's that bitch from Survivor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and my favorite part is, you know, when people would come up to me and they were like, oh, my God, I totally hate you.
Right.
You know, like, what do you say? Thanks.
Yeah, the funny thing to me is, because that happens all the time to actors, of course.
Nellie Olson.
So yeah, Alison Arngrim. People would always go, I hated you so much. And you can still play it off, like, well, I know you're talking about my character. But you were
reality
playing a game.
TV. Yeah.
But you were yourself. And you can't, you can't say, yeah, that wasn't me. Cause to a certain extent, obviously it was. But it always amazes me that people think that kind of stuff is okay.
That's the thing. I think more people are more educated now on the way reality TV works. And they know that it's edited and pieced together to create a storyline. Mm-hmm. You know, so the way I was portrayed the original time I played is not exactly the way it happened, but. You know, I've always been very forthcoming with the fact that I gave them a lot of material because I speak my mind. You know,
well, and also, I mean, the more material you give them, the more camera time you get, and obviously, you know, you knew what you were doing, and it worked out. You know,
and that was never even my intention. Like, I didn't go in there going, "Oh, I'm going to be," you know, "I'm going to get more camera time than anybody else." That was never in my mind because, first of all, it was only the second season, and nobody really even knew how it worked yet.
Right.
And I just wanted to win $1 million. Like, that was my intention, period.
Which should be. That's the, yeah. I mean, you don't want to go on a show. If you want to go on a reality show to be famous, there's a lot better options out there than Survivor.
Yeah, at that point, you're just like, I want to be as well-balanced and successful as Richard Hatch has turned out to be. That guy's solid.
Have you watched any of Celebrity Apprentice? Did you watch the premiere Celebrity Apprentice, Jerry?
I missed it, but I am going to go and find it online as soon as we get off.
It was pretty funny because he was the project manager for the first one, and the guys lost, but he got in a fight with David Cassidy, of all people. It was really funny. I suggest everyone watch it because
they put a cast together of train wrecks, right?
Gary Busey and Meatloaf and Star Jones. Yeah, it's pretty bad. Jose Canseco is my favorite because he's very soft spoken. But Trump's like, "What do you think of Richard Hatch?" I don't like him. He's a jerk. He just says flat out, "He's a jerk. I don't like him." And he's huge, so he's kind of scary.
Right.
But that's funny. All right, let's move on.
The whole idea that, like, yeah, we have these people here because maybe Gary Busey's going to run a business.
Yeah, right.
He's got brain damage. Let's move on to other topics. A sad happening this week, and I wanted to bring it up so Tom could speak about it. The guy who created Pokemon died. I know you're very upset about that.
I thought you were going to mention the earthquake.
This is a little more important, Jerry. Come on, get your priorities straight. The guy who invented Pokemon died, and he didn't even get to catch them all. That's the saddest part. Before he died, he had failed to catch them all. Tom, do you want to say a few words?
What can one possibly say on such an occasion?
Well, I mean, you could talk about all his greatest achievements, or
you can sing a little song.
Yeah, you want to?
About how I want to be the very best?
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. I guess that's all we need to say about that.
That's actually kind of sad, right? He was a very well-known guy.
I honestly don't know. I don't watch Pokemon.
Let's go with yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
He is famous. Yeah, it's sad when people die. I went to the Paley Festival this past week, and I went to the Parks and Rec show and the Eastbound and Down show, and then last night was the Freaks and Geeks and Undeclared Reunion. And it was really fun, and there was a lot of good information. The best thing I heard was at Parks and Rec, they were talking about Mayor Gunderson, and Amy Poehler said that she her dream was always to get Bill Murray to play Mayor Gunderson on the show. And she's like, does anyone know how we can get a hold of him? And I thought that was kind of funny because even they can't get a hold of Bill Murray to play. And she goes, and it'd be really easy. It'd be like 3-hour shoot. He can sit the whole time. It would be awesome. But it was really
Frank
funny.
Frank Sinatra style, go to Chicago and...
Yeah, exactly. But I thought that would be awesome if Bill Murray
set up the set on the golf course.
Gunderson. Do you watch Parks and Rec, Jerry?
I don't, but I've heard some really good things about it, so...
Yeah, it's a super funny show. And they showed us, the episode they showed us was the Harvest Festival episode, which has yet to air. And it was hysterical.
I'm sure.
Is it on this week?
Yeah, because I saw the preview.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's on this week, and it's super, super funny. I suggest everybody watch it. The best thing is they shot it at this... where they have like this pumpkin patch every Halloween that we went to this year. Me and Gracie and Brooke went to it, so we recognized the pumpkin patch. So that was kind of fun. The other thing that happened at the Paley Festival this week is just last night I got yelled at by Leslie Mann and Judd Apatow, like literally yelled in my face. And for those of you who have never been yelled at by a famous and powerful and successful person, I don't recommend it because it is not something that you can look back on fondly.
What did you do?
Well, I don't want to tell the story because it's not a funny story at all. But I was asking a question.
They said his bag was too big.
Yeah, the problem was I had this carry-on in the Paley Festival, and I was trying to put it on the seat in front of me. And one of the ushers was like, that bag's too big. And I was like, William S. Paley. And they fucking booted me. I couldn't believe it.
I thought you would say, Josh Whedon.
But it's not a funny story, so I'm not going to tell it. And it's not like they come off bad or anything. I come off just as bad as they do, if not worse. So it's not like they did anything wrong. But it was an awkward situation, to say the least, because I knew people there. Sam Levine, who's been a guest on the show, and Jarrett Grody was there. And I was trying to meet people. And, you know, Seth Rogen was very nice, and he and Brooke talked about being
Paul told
Canada.
Me the story. Honestly, the crux of the story goes like this. Anytime you're any comic ever in the world will sometimes make what they think is the most innocuous joke, not even cussing, nothing like, and... Because the nature of making jokes is sometimes it's not going to work out the way you wanted because people are going to take it wrong. So that's really the crux of it, right?
Yeah. And it's not like I blame them or say that, you know, I'm not trying to say they're too sensitive.
And anybody who knows Paul, like, this is low on the list of things Paul has said. This is so ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, because Paul said stuff to me like one quick thing. When I was a young man, a bad thing happened to me at a carnival. Paul's made jokes about
and
that.
How many bad things happen at carnivals? Come on.
Yeah.
Carnivals are great places.
Approximately 20% of them.
What? Oh, really? Yeah. Ugh, that's a high percentage.
Not to get too deep into it, but I got a bad candy apple.
Now, speaking of saying... Now, I remember when we first met, Jerry, and I think Jim was there, too, when we met, because you were a friend of Lauren Wiley's. Is that correct?
Yeah, and you were doing fancy ketchup.
That's right. And we were at a party... Well, that Lauren had invited us to.
What?
And we met you. This was long before you were on Survivor. And it's funny because I didn't recognize you on the show but until Graham called. He was like, didn't we meet that girl, Jerry? And I'm like, I don't know, because you're much shorter in person.
This wasn't the wig party, was it?
No, it wasn't the wig party.
Okay.
Because you're a little tiny person. You're a little cute little tiny person.
Well, yeah, you're like 3'6", right?
But you have a big personality, so watching you on Survivor, you seem larger than life, and at least that was my perception. But you're
that and TVs are very small. Come on,
that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
And am I right too? Like, I always thought it was silly that you would even need the money because you have all that gold.
Gold?
Because you're a leprechaun.
I'm just being silly.
That's what he's trying to say. But hey, we met at this party.
I'm not that small.
But what I remember the best about the party is you were kind of a smartass, and you know, obviously, you know, you're. My first thought was, wow, this woman is very attractive. But I was in the position at the time I was married, so I would meet a pretty girl and just kind of be an asshole because I thought, well, I'm married and I don't want this to turn into anything, so I think I'll just be a smartass.
There's a danger of that.
Right? There's always a danger. But we would always live vicariously through Graham, who would always put the moves on. But I remember what I remember the most is that you gave as good as you got. We were all kind of giving each other shit. And you were pretty good at it, and I thought that was – I was like, oh, that girl's got something to say. She's not just – she's not being pissed off at all. And this is why I'm trying to relate it to what happened last night. You know, we were giving you shit, and you were giving us shit, and everybody was just having a good time and giving each other shit. And I'm sure since then you've gotten even more shit in
your life. More shit than you could possibly measure.
But obviously you have to have a good attitude about it. Otherwise, yeah. You're going to fucking go nuts.
Exactly.
And that happened to me when I was on, you know, for the short time that I was on TV. I would get emails from strangers who would say, your show sucks and you're a giant fat man and nice life. You watch too much TV. I can't wait for your show to get canceled. And I would be like, what? Why do these people hate me so much?
Well,
they don't know me.
They hate themselves, Paul. They hate themselves.
Right. If you know me and you hate me, that makes sense. But yeah, I guess that's the bottom line is they have hatred and they want to spew it on someone.
It's so peculiar, too, when people actively seek out to converse with something they dislike. Because I understand saying, oh, I'm a fan of this person, so I'm going to write them a note. But like there are people who do the, like, the, you don't like Parks and Rec, who are like, I got to find the people who make Parks and Rec and let them know I don't enjoy the show. Yes. Where what you could do instead is just not watch the show.
Just don't even that seems pretend pretty it doesn't good. Even exist.
Like, if I were to, like, email Cheerios and go, the hell, Cheerios? There's no flavor to your cereal.
What is wrong with you, Cheerios?
Why don't you have some nuts or berries in there, you asshole?
And then they write back and send you a free box of Cheerios with strawberries.
And I'm like, finally, Cheerios.
Like, you wrote Gloria Gaynor a letter, and you'd be like, who cares if you'll survive? You're not better than me.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Oh, my God. You don't like the toasty oat goodness of Cheerios?
Now listen.
you opened a fucking you hit the hornet's nest there. Look out! Good thing you're not in the room. He's fucking mad.
Part of a complete breakfast, my ass.
All right, let's move on to trivia for this episode. Last week, when Greg Grunberg was on the show, I said that me and his brother Brad both auditioned for a procedural, and nobody was able to guess it. Tom guessed CSI. Jim, I think his brother
Barney Miller or something, right?
His brother guessed CSI Miami, and Jim guessed Barney Miller. Do you have a guess, Jerry? Do you want to try to guess what the procedural show that I auditioned for was?
Oh, gosh. I don't really watch any of those because they're all kind of the same now.
Certainly.
I'm just going to roll the dice. You know, I'm feeling a little Vegas here. NCIS.
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good guess, but no. It was
a good guess. It's a terrible question.
Terrible question, yes.
Yeah.
The answer is CSI New York. That's what I auditioned for.
See, if you'd kept the bit up, we would have got it.
Yeah, see? True. Why did you not say the third one? I thought for sure you were going to guess CSI New York. But
well, because I'm barely...
Because you wanted to say Barney Miller.
I'm barely participating.
True. Nobody got it right. No one wrote in with the correct answer, so we still have prizes.
Did you do your New York accent when you auditioned?
Yeah, you know me, I'm all about accents. But the question this week is about Judd Apatow. Before he yelled at me, and before Freaks and Geeks and Undeclared premiered, he did another pilot that did not make it on the air. But I saw it, and it had a great cast. Amy Poehler was a regular on it. The question is, what was the name of that show?
Oh.
It never made it on the air?
It was only a pilot. I saw it on Brilliant But Canceled when they had that Brilliant But Canceled series on, I want to say Logo. And you can see it online. There's tons of tapes about
it. Amy Poehler was in it.
Yes. Anybody have an idea or remember what the show was?
No.
I don't want to give too many hints about it because then you can easily look it up.
I'm too lazy to look it up right now, so I'm just going to go with no, I don't know.
Okay, you guys got a guess?
It's probably true. Was it called Bread and Butter?
No, it was not called Bread and Butter, but...
Okay, that was a good show.
Peanut Butter and Jelly.
Oh, another good guess. Tom, you got a guess?
Heat Vision and Jack.
No! That was a good unsold pilot, though. That was Ben Stiller's show, though, not Judd Apatow's. So if you know the answer to that, you can write me, Paul, at thekingoftv.com, and I will send you a prize. We have new stickers for the show that feature a photo of me and Henry Winkler, and plenty of other awesome prizes that we can send out, as well as new bonus videos that we are currently making. We're in the second series of 10. If you want to order those bonus videos, they're, of course, 99 cents each, or 5 for $4, or 10 for $7. How much is that a piece, Jerry?
Oh, math? I don't do that either.
So there you go. You can order those on my website, thekingoftv.com. And also on my website, if you click the Musings link, you can go to the new blog I write for. It's called Perspectives. It's all about parenting and teaching, and I have a new column up there.
Tim Meadows is on that, right?
No, I knew eventually you were going to make that joke. I knew you were going to say that eventually. I expected you to say it last week, but you let it slide. It's about parenting and teaching, and I write a funny column this week.
3 a.m.
This week my blog is called Everything I Needed to Learn About Being a Parent I Learned from James T. Kirk. Let's talk about this. Now, do you watch Glee, Jerry?
You know what? I did not watch it when it originally aired, but now I'm Netflixing it, and I watch marathons of it. I absolutely love it.
That's a good way to do it, too, because after one episode, you think, oh, I need to see another one. You can just pop it in. That's the great thing about marathons is, like, when people would tell me, well, I just got 24. I just got, you know, season 3 of 24. I'm like, well, you better clear your calendar because if you can watch them all in a row, you will.
Yeah.
That's because you'll just say, I got to see what happens next.
That's how the first running marathon started. A guy ran a mile and went, oh, I got to see what happens next.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm pretty much one of those people that TiVos the stuff that I do watch, but I will say that this last season of Spartacus, I could not wait. I mean, I literally did clear my calendar every week to make sure I could watch Spartacus. That was one of the most brilliant TV shows I've seen.
How do you think it compared to the first season?
They were both equally as amazing. With full frontal males and total yumminess.
It was pretty awesome. I gotta say, the show, it certainly has something for the men and the ladies. Both.
So sexy. I mean, the orgy. My God, come on. Don't we all want to be Roman now?
In one of these last episodes, they were fighting in the Colosseum, and they show a shot of the stands, and it's like a bunch of men and women, you know, cheering and whatever, and then there's a couple fucking. There's like a guy who's got a woman on his lap, and he's clearly banging her while all these people are standing around cheering. I was like, wow, that is a great arena to see an event in.
Those Romans knew how to party. I'll tell you what.
100%.
She said to him, he had said to her, hey, do you want to be in the sixth row high club? Because that's what they did back then.
I just wish there was an arena like that today. Like, you go see Disney on Ice, maybe you get some action. In the stands,
Disney
right?
on Ice, really? That's
hey, if not, that's what I got,
not even like MMA or something.
You nope.
Only if you dress like ice. Goofy.
Well, I don't want to be distracted by what's going on stage. At my age, I got to put all my concentration into it. But here's what I want to say about Glee. I don't know if you watched the most recent episode.
No, I didn't. Don't ruin it.
Well, they had one of the. It was all about sex. So one of the songs they did was "Do You Want to Touch Me." And, you know, most people know that as a Joan Jett song, but it was originally done by Gary Glitter, who, if you know anything about him, you know that he went to prison for child molestation.
Oh, my God.
His other big hit was Rock and Roll Part 2, you know. Da, 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 that song.
Hey,
exactly. Those are the only lyrics. And apparently here in America, it's not such a big deal. But in England, he was a big rock star. And so they were considering whether or not they were actually going to show that episode of Glee, because they're like, well, do we want to show this Gary Glitter thing? And I thought it was something worth talking about, simply because it's a bunch of high school kids singing Do You Want to Touch Me, a song written by a pedophile. Who has thoughts on this issue?
Well,
go ahead, Jerry, you're the guest, you go first.
Well, I mean, I've only seen season one up to this point. I just finished that one. And I got to say, there's quite a few things that come up in this show that I don't really think are appropriate for younger viewers, but
they certainly walk the line.
Yeah, and so I just kind of accept the fact that every week I might be slightly disturbed or incredibly entertained. That's really how I feel about that show. I don't know anything about the background of that song, and I don't know, do most people know that kind of stuff?
That's the thing, is I think here in America, no. If anyone knows anything about the song, they think it's a Joan Jett song. But I guess in England, it's a big deal because he was, you know, it's like Cliff Richard. People in America have never heard of Cliff Richard, but over in England, he was like Elvis. So I guess over there, they say, yeah, that's that Gary Glitter pedophile song. Why are you singing it? Like if you were in your office whistling Do You Want to Touch Me, people go, hey, why are you whistling that pedophile song? Or more accurately, "Hey, oi, why are you whistling that pedophile song? You shouldn't be whistling that pedophile song, mate."
Hey, you do do accent.
Bits and pieces.
That's right. He was touching the twig and berries, he was.
That's no cricket.
Jim, your thoughts?
Well, here's what I think in general about stuff like that. It's you know, did you like Peter Pan? And because I did. Peter Pan's a great story. Mm-hmm. And there were rumors about the guy who wrote Peter Pan. And I don't know if any of those rumors are true. And so you decide if you can separate the art from the artist. And obviously, if the art is like, hey, this is specifically about pedophilia, well, then no, you can't separate it, because that's him. Like, if he writes his great musical, Man of Love, doing it with boys, then you can't separate it. But it's like, I like the Mamas and the Papas. Clearly now, that's been recontextualized because we know what a creep one of them was.
Yeah.
But does that mean, like, you know, Monday, oh, is that the day he did it? That's not, you know. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I don't know if you should think that way.
Well, I'll never listen to that song the same way again. That's for sure. California Dreaming, right? Dreaming about fucking his daughter, right?
Oh, Jesus. Itchy. We're getting kind of itchy for sex with a kid. I don't know. So I don't know. Like, obviously, this, because it's a very sexual song, it maybe has. But then again, I mean, you're right. The show's for adults, so.
That's true. Now, Tom, you are a big fan of Glee, and you
have Gary often, Glitter.
And Gary Glitter. In fact, you guys used to go out for a while, right? Didn't you date Gary Glitter for a while?
When I was younger.
When you were. But you are often, you're a big defender of the show, and I, you always seem to have a good spin on it. What did you watch that episode?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. And it was obviously, this episode, Jerry, since you didn't see it, was all about sex. It was the sex episode. They sang, Do You Want to Touch Me? And I Want Your Sex and Kiss. And that Stevie Nicks lesbian song. So it was,
Stevie Nicks lesbian
song? You know, hey, I'm Stevie Nicks. I'm a lesbian. Oh, squirt some cocaine up my butt. You know that song.
All right.
But it was a very highly sexualized episode, and
great song.
And my kids watched the show, and I was talking to them about it. And you know, they're only 10 and 12, so you know, I try to keep them in touch with the real world, but at the same time, I want to make sure they understand what's going on. What were your feelings on it, Tom?
Well, I thought it was typical Glee in a lot of ways, in that Glee will do these sort of like, we're going to talk about this big important topic like sex or drugs, and then never actually get around to making a point.
Yeah, right. Like the alcohol episode.
Yeah. But like, I've never. To me, I watch Glee like I watch The Simpsons. It's a cartoon. It's big and it's outrageous, and the characters are consistent up to a point. But it can be a different show each week.
True. And characters make choices that are out of character, and you know, one week this character wants this, next week this character wants that. So yeah, you have to roll with it. I mean, that was one of the problems I had with the show when it first started. I was like, boy, none of this stuff would happen in school. And then I came to realize that's because this is a real shitty school.
Right.
This is like one of the worst schools in America. So you know, you look at it that way, and it makes perfect sense. There's a bad principal and bad teachers. And, you know, they don't have a music program; they just have a glee club. So.
Well, I have a question, because this became a debate the other night over dinner with some friends. I have friends who seem to think that Glee is geared towards the female and gay male audience and that there's very few straight men who would ever want to watch it. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, the three of us are straight and two of us watch it. And then, but one of us is bi-curious, and so do you, does that make you want to watch it more, Jim?
I watch it half as much.
I mean, I mean, obviously, you know, I think the audience is gay males and young girls, because my two daughters are crazy about the show. You know, they love it a lot, and I think, you know, because a lot of the main characters...
And old dentists.
What?
Yeah.
Why old dentists?
I don't know. They love it. Like,
well, people 4 out of 5 do.
Yeah.
They recommend it anyway. Look out. But it's got a big gay following. You know, there's no secret about that. But I don't think that they necessarily cater to that. You know,
I think those are the audiences that are going to be most receptive to it, because I think a lot of straight guys have a chip on the shoulder about musicals. So
that's true. Now you have, I assume you have one or two gay friends, Jerry, and you call them your gay friends.
Just a couple. Yeah, no, I've been called a fag hag, but now, you know, more recently that's been upgraded to fruit fly.
Oh, so, that's very nice.
Yeah.
And do they watch? Have you talked about it with them?
Oh, of course they watch it. Yeah.
And you guys all love it. Yeah. But I mean, it's funny because my girlfriend hates the show. She's the only one in the house who does not watch it. Mainly because she doesn't like the music. And that's the bottom line. If it was not a musical show, she'd probably watch it. But she's not a fan of covers and that kind of performing and stuff. Plus the auto-tuning gets a little out of control sometimes. I'll even admit that.
Yeah.
It gets to be a little annoying. But I love Lea Michele. Who is your favorite on the show, Jerry?
My favorite, oh gosh, I don't know. Maybe I can't remember her name. She's the one teacher who's had a crush on the Glee Club guy forever. She's got red hair.
Oh yeah, Jemma Mays.
Is she still on it?
Yeah, she's still on it. She's married to John Stamos now on the show. Spoiler alert, but.
Oh, damn it.
In the second season, they had to switch things up, and she married John Stamos.
Stamos is on the show regularly now?
No, he's semi-regular. He's on every once in a great while. But he's awesome when he is. What was the song they sang in this last episode? Was I Want Your Sex?
I can't remember.
No. They sang Afternoon Delight. That's what it was.
Oh, my God. Right.
It was great. Right. It was really funny because... He's like, we all know what Afternoon Delight means. And she goes, yes, it's a delicious dessert you have at a picnic with coconut and marshmallows. And that was it was very funny, but he's awesome. Now, do you think, would you watch 2 and a Half Men if John Stamos was on it, Jerry?
I didn't really watch it before.
Yeah, but so. It's John Stamos. Come on. I'm not saying would you still. I'm saying would you start watching it? Because I would.
If John Stamos was
on 2 and a Half Men, I'm all over it.
I don't think so. I'd watch it if I was on it.
Yeah, if it was 1 and a Half Men and a lady and a pizza place.
And a chick, yeah, totally.
You'd watch it? What if Bob Saget replaced Charlie Sheen?
No.
I would totally be in.
What if Bob Saget replaces John Cryer and John Cryer replaces Charlie Sheen? Would you really?
No, here's what you get. Bob Saget replaces Charlie Sheen. Dave Coulier replaces John Cryer. And they throw in John Stamos. And replace the kid with 3 girls.
Right.
Who's on board with that?
Totally.
Wow.
And then
they move
sometimes
to San Francisco.
Right.
And sometimes they watch funny videos.
I am on board with that in a big way. That sounds great.
You know what? I love John Cryer. I absolutely adore him.
I do too. I'm a huge fan of his.
Yeah, and I always felt like he was kind of in the background in that show. But it was the same thing over and over again. You know, you watch it every once in a while and it's kind of the same deal. Charlie Sheen's bringing home another chick and John Cryer can't get laid. And the kid, I don't understand that kid at all.
Not, apparently. Well, John Cryer had this show for a while. It was very short lived on Fox and I thought he was hysterical and no one else on it was very funny. Vivica Fox was on it and Elliot Gould was on it, but he was hilarious. And I thought, man, one of these days he's going to get the right show to showcase his talent, and he's going to be hilarious. And then 2 and a Half Men came along, and he was basically Charlie Sheen's sidekick. And I thought, boy, that's too bad, because he really is super funny. And
maybe this will be the opportunity, because he's part of a big, successful show, And maybe if they don't end up saving the show, or even if they save the show for like a season or two, which is probably what would happen, probably do the thing where they get somebody to replace and then in 2 years it's gone anyway, then he can have his own show.
Now, Jerry, have you ever thought of, you know, having your own meltdown just to boost your career?
Just for some publicity and some family rehab?
Get yourself a machete and run around Hollywood and just get on TV?
Oh, you know what? I've thought of having a meltdown for sure, but not to get back on TV. Just
for the hell of it?
Just a proof point.
Yeah, that's true. I've done that many times in my life.
Here's what I know.
One day you shot yourself with a BB gun.
Yeah. Remember that? Remember that day I shot myself with a BB gun?
I know this is played out, so I don't want to say too much about it, but here's what I have to say about Charlie Sheen.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the BB gun.
No.
Because that has been played out.
Yeah. Here's what I think about Charlie Sheen this week. Is whatever else, man, I've never seen anybody so in control of the story about their out-of-control addiction. He is so in control of all the publicity, and somehow it's spinning him into making more money. It's weird. The whole thing is bizarre. Like, he has a new publicist, or personal, whatever. He's got a new guy because the old guy quit, and the new guy says, his thing is, I'm a warlock in training. So now even, like, I don't understand. The whole thing is so weird to me.
What I think is awesome is, I was just watching this thing about on PBS, Pioneers of Television. It was all about late-night talk shows. And they talked about when Jack Parr walked off his show, and it was live. And they showed the clip, and I was like, boy, that was interesting. And that's certainly a part of American history and TV history. But, you know, 20, 30 years from now, when our kids are grown-ups, they'll be talking about this Charlie Sheen thing, and it will all be on video for them to see. They'll talk about the day Charlie Sheen went nuts, and, like, I mean, that's an amazing thing. Like, people will talk about Two and a Half Men in two different ways. They'll say, remember, it was pre-Charlie and post-Charlie, and people say, I loved it when John Stamos joined the show. I never watched it before, and somebody will say, oh, that show was never the same. But there will be, you can go to the Museum of TV and Radio and watch an episode of Two and a Half Men, all his videotaped breakdowns and interviews, and then watch an episode of the new Two and a Half Men. And I think it'll be an awesome thing for historians to have and to talk about in the day.
I just see him. To me, the whole thing is just really sad.
Well, obviously.
Like he's totally going to die. Like, keep saying to everybody, I'm like, where are his friends?
Right.
Where are his real friends? Like, this is the saddest part of it all.
And I've always wondered.
I believe he has them, but those are the people he's keeping at a distance.
And I've always wondered about, you know, his dad, obviously, you know, even though Martin Sheen played the president and he's a well-respected actor and all.
He wasn't the president.
He wasn't the fucking president. Fuck him. No. But he's a bit of a fuck-up himself. If you know anything about him, you know, when he went to shoot Apocalypse Now, he got drunk and did drugs and, you know, and almost died. And, you know, he's done a lot of protesting and got arrested and stuff. And so it's not like he's a straight arrow or anything. But obviously, at some point, he said, my kids are adults now and they have to make their own choices. And unlike John Voight, who came out and went, Angelina, please call me. Oh, I know there's a problem. You know, Martin Sheen says, well, there's nothing I can do but be there for him. And it's not like, you know, kids need to be rescued. When you're 40 years old, you don't need to be rescued by your parents. I just think it's a great extension of his character from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
Isn't he doing that character now? Isn't that what he's doing?
Yeah.
He's all grown up. Oh, by the way, I got to say, when I got yelled at by Apatow and Leslie Mann, I tweeted it immediately. I immediately tweeted, I just got yelled at by Judd Apatow and Leslie Mann. And our friend Alex Bays tweeted back, you still got it. And I thought, well, I guess some people know who I am.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't have any more topics. Anyone else got anything they want to bring up?
I'll let Tom first if you got anything.
Nope.
All right. Well, so do you ever listen to the show? Ha ha.
He's talking to you, Jim.
Yeah.
He knows better.
I know nobody does, so it's fine. But there's a little segment we do in a how to be a dick segment.
We teach the kids at home how they can be dicks just like us.
Just kind of things you'll do in real life. And I think I've discussed this one a little bit before, but there's a thing I'll do that I find really funny is to say a particular joke wrong. And the real joke is, like, the joke is, people will say, I was talking to my friend Dick Hertz, and then somebody else will say, who's Dick Hertz? And you go, mine does. You know that stupid joke, right?
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing that I will often do, is if somebody says a name, and it just occurs to me as funny to do this, if somebody happens to, like, we're talking about Ken Burns.
Right, and I'll say, oh, did you guys see Ken Burns last night?
Yeah, and somebody will say, who's Ken Burns? And I'll go, mine does, because that doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, Burns is a verb.
Ken Burns makes too much sense.
Yeah, a little too much sense. I think, yeah. Isn't it better when someone says, hey, did you see Don Cunningham? And they go, who's Don Cunningham?
And they go, mine does. Yeah, that's better. Regardless. So here's a variation of it that I did today that I laughed so hard at the fact that it doesn't make any sense is somebody was just, we were talking about baking with a friend of mine, and they said, how do you make pumpkin bread? And I say, and I said, take away its credit card.
See, I've done that before, but I always go with don't pay him. That's the one I say.
Oh, that's good.
I say it's don't just, pay him.
What's great, too, is I'm laughing for no goddamn reason, because that's not funny.
Well, and isn't the other one you like to do is someone goes, hey, how do I get to your house from here?
Practice.
Right. That's the other great one.
Right.
Practice. So that's something you can do,
if you
Jerry,
want to
in your
be
daily life.
Terrible company.
I'll get right on that.
If you want people to think that you're a dick, you can do that.
Yeah, but you can get away with it.
People already know you. You're already famous,
and
right?
And you're adorable.
Yeah, and you're a cute young lady. So now, is there anything else you got going on you want to tell people about, Jerry, that they can check out?
Right now, it's all just kind of things in the talking part of making it happen. So, you know, I'm not going to jinx anything, but...
But they can see you on the RTV Zone.
Yes, RTVZone.com. Just... The best way to get a hold of me nowadays, honestly, is to go on my Facebook page, and I had to get a second page, so go to Jerry Manthe 2, and I know, it's crazy. I don't know why Facebook limits you like that.
Well, I guess if you have a fan, if you make a fan page, there's no limit to how many fans you can have. But
yeah,
it's not,
but nobody does those. Like, nobody wants to go to those because they don't feel personal.
Exactly. It's not. And it's not personal. You're absolutely right. I have my own page, and we have a fan page for the show, but, you know, I don't communicate with anybody through that. I just post episodes of the show on it.
You're also on
the Twitter?
I do Twitter a little bit. I'm not a big fan. I think it's very limiting, you know, the way you can only have a certain number of characters, and I always seem to have too many, and then I get pissed off, and then I'm like, fuck it.
You got a lot to say.
Whatever. Yeah.
You're a verbose young lady.
I do, you know, if anybody wants to, like, look at some fun stuff from all the crazy, the last decade, I posted, like, every video clip imaginable on jerrymanthe.com, so.
Oh, that's what I wanted to talk about. You made these hilarious videos basically lampooning yourself and Survivor.
Oh, yeah.
and the whole product placement thing. And they are so well made for you guys who haven't seen them. There's one where she's basically in her bikini, and it looks like she's on Survivor wearing the hat, and she looks miserable. She's like, you guys, I'm so thirsty. I'm about to throw up. Can we just do this? And they're like, okay, just say I love Scope. And she's like, what? Just here, hold this and say I love Scope. And she's going, I love Scope. But she's clearly miserable. And I'm watching this going, did they fucking make her do this on the island? What the fuck? But those are all obviously they're made up. You and a friend made a whole bunch of those. Am I right?
Well, what it was the Writers Guild they were boycotting reality TV because all the writers weren't getting paid for all the work they were doing. And so they decided they were going to create this viral campaign and attack product placement and the advertisers. And so these brilliant guys wrote these three pieces, and you can actually find them all on jerrymanthe.com. They're hilarious. Like I still every once in a while show them to people because they look so real. Like they actually came from Survivor.
They really are. I mean, honestly, I was like, I know this was never on the show, but is this like footage that they cut out? What the fuck is this? Because they look so good. And, you know, to your credit, you're doing, you don't wink at the camera, you know, there's no hint that you're just fooling around and making fun of yourself.
Skills come into play.
Now, let me ask you an acting question. When you're pretending to be miserable, before you grab the scope, what, like, experience were you drawing on after?
Anything that in your past that you're able to draw from.
Oh, yeah, totally my imagination. Yeah.
Now, I know if fans of Survivor want me to ask you, if they asked you to go on a fourth version of Survivor, would you do it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm crazy, and I really want to win $1 million, and I got so damn close this last time.
That's the other thing people don't realize is they don't pay you anything extra to be on it. You get what you got the very first time you were on, pretty much. It's all the same rules, and you only get money. You only get the money that you win on the show, right?
Yeah, and the longer you're there, the more money you make. But
it's not like they say, and we're going to give everybody an extra 10 grand to be on the show.
As a matter of fact, they've been cutting back the budget and giving people less, which I think is ridiculous.
That's crazy. Now, this was a big thing during the last show that those two chicks quit, and they talked about changing the rules.
Ugh.
If you quit, you get to keep the money you made up to that point?
Yeah, see, they really need to change those rules up, because I didn't even watch that season until I heard that two people quit in one episode. And I was like, what happened? Like, what caused these two girls to quit? And there was absolutely no reason whatsoever. They weren't miserable. They weren't suffering.
No, there wasn't even that much rain.
Yeah. I mean, and then they got to be on the jury.
Yeah. They got paid and got to be in the jury. That's
where I went. No, if you quit, you just gave up all your rights to any decision having to do with who wins this.
Absolutely. Game. I follow Probst on Twitter, and someone asked him once, how come Sue Hawk isn't on Villains and Heroes? And he said, because it's supposed to be Survivor's Greatest Players, not Survivor's Greatest Quitters.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, he's mad about that.
Yeah.
And he made it clear when those two girls quit. He was like, enough. I'm tired of these quitters coming on the show. He takes it very personally.
Well, my whole philosophy on why there seems to be so many more quitters now is because the casting process has gotten really lazy. You know, if you look at 16, 20 people on the show, there's like maybe 8 to 10 of them are from L.A.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it seems to me like in the old days, they used to go out of their way to really find people who really wanted to be on the show more than anything in the world, you know?
Well, I remember specifically on Fans versus Favorites, you know, Natalie Bolton, who was she was the only fan to make it, like, to make it very far. She was in, like, the top three, I think,
mm-hmm.
and she was in the favorite crowd. But her sister is Tiffany Bolton, who was on Beat the Geeks with me, and she told me that Natalie had never watched the show before.
The Fans versus Favorites season, we all found out afterwards that it was kind of a misleading setup.
There was clearly a couple of guys on there who watched the show, but, you know, it seemed to me it was more of, let's bring back some of the favorites so they can compete.
It almost makes you think the reality show isn't entirely real.
Yes, dummy. You're so dumb. All right. So go check out jerrymanthi.com and see those funny videos and everything else Jerry's got going on. And if you want to be, follow us on Twitter, of course, it's at Paul Goebel Show. You can be a fan. Also, I'm trying to get Jarrett Grody from Undeclared on the show, and I've started a fan page that says, get Jarrett Grody to be on my podcast. So far, 20 people.
Yeah, I know. It's growing slow.
It's good. And I saw him last night. And I said, you know, you don't even have to be on the show. Just come and, you know, hang out with us. But
who
he said
he's a
friend of mine. He's a comedian. He used to be on Undeclared, but he said he doesn't do podcasts. And so I'm now making it a mission to get him on my podcast. And
I don't blame him. What's his reason?
He said whatever your reason is the same reason. And also, Jim, you have a show you want people to come to?
I do, yeah. I'm doing a series of stand-up comedy shows Wednesday at the Gardenia. The Gardenia is Santa Monica and La Brea in Los Angeles. For the rest of the Wednesdays here in March, show starts at 9 p.m. It's at the Gardenia. Very funny show. It's got a lot of funny comedians. I have Ty Rivera's going to be with me. Also on the 30th, which is the last of these shows, not kidding, the best Liza Minnelli impersonator in L.A. is going to do a drop-in couple songs, so I'm pretty excited.
Drag Queen?
Yes.
Sweet.
A very, really, really sweet, sweet, talented fellow, and disturbingly feminine when you know, just very attractive. It's really wonderful. And a really nice singer, too. It's not like one of those drag things where the funny part is the guy has a beard. He really does it. He does it the right way. Very much a great impression.
Yeah. So that's a fun show, and I'm going to do one of the shows, so check
it
out.
I'm asking him to sing Liza with a Z, because I'd love to see that.
That's pretty cool. All right. Anything else we want to promote or talk about before we wrap this up?
I don't know. Watch TV, everybody.
Okay, shut up. Do your mashup and let's get out of here.
All right, here's my mashup. Whoa, I can't believe I got married to Pinky Tuscadero. Yeah, no, my life is always having to fix up around the garage. This is awful. I need to get away from here and just take a break. Whoa, sleeping.
Stupid. I already know it.
Oh, large beard of Mundo.
Yeah, I get it. All right. Do you know it, Tom?
Give Jerry a shot.
Okay, well, I'll explain to you what was going on. He was basically the guy who plays Fonzie. He took a nap, slept for a long time, and grew up with a long beard. You have any idea what that would be, Jerry?
I don't know how I'm supposed to say it, but Happy Days, Henry Winkler, and Rumpelstiltskin.
Rumpelstiltskin was the midget who wanted to steal your baby. The guy who slept for a long time, he's doing Rip Van Winkler.
Oh, got it.
Or Henry Van Winkle?
Rip Van Winkler, yeah.
Rip Van Winkler, yeah. I do like the end, yeah, the large beard of Mundo.
Yeah.
Sure, that's what
I think I actually tried to do an impression this time. There was a...
Yeah, you tried and failed.
I got the Tuscadero thing.
Yeah, sit on it. All right, Jerry, thank you for being here. We appreciate you taking the time out to be on the show. Tom, Jim, thank you for being here. And everybody else at home, hey, go fuck yourself.
At first I was afraid, I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong, I learned how to get along. And so you're back from outer space. I just walked in to find you here without that look upon your face. I should have changed my fucking lock. I would have made you leave your key if I'd have known for just 1 second you'd be back to bother me. Oh, now go walk out the door. Just turn around. Now you're not welcome anymore. Weren't you the one who tried to break me with desire? Did you think I'd crumble? Did you think I'd lay down and die? Oh, not I will survive. Yeah, as long as I know how to love, I know I'll be alive. I've got all my life to live. I've got all my love to give. I will survive. I will survive. Of my broken heart, and I've spent oh so many nights just feeling sorry for myself. I used to cry, but now I hold my head up high, and you see me with somebody new. I'm not that stupid little person still in love with you. And so you thought you'd just drop by and you expect me to be free. But now I'm saving all my loving for someone who's loving me. Oh, now go walk out the door, just turn around. Now you're not welcome anymore. Weren't you the one who tried to break me with desire? Did you think I'd crumble? Did you think I'd lay down and die? Oh, now I will survive, yeah. As long as I know how to love, I know I'll be alive. I've got all my life to live. I've got all my love to give. I will survive. I will survive. Yeah, yeah.